Kia ora and welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 244. Today is Tuesday, January 18, 2011. It's been a month since my last podcast, actually just over, because my last one was on December 17th. And that one, of course, was called And Relax, so this one is called And Resume, because that's what we're doing today. Now, I'm not going to be terribly serious, apart from a couple items in the news, because I'm just going to do some updates and basically tell you what's been going on over the past month and so on. And then in the next episode, we'll start with more serious topics again. But first, I want to give some updates, an update to a news story that I've been talking about for, well, several weeks now, and that's the Pike River mining disaster. It's pretty certain now that the mine is going to be sealed, which means that it is probably unlikely that the bodies of the perished 29 miners will ever be recovered. There are a lot of reasons for that. The main reason is that the mine is still unstable, and that it's just not safe to go in. And there are all sorts of issues swirling around. One of the problems is it's not just that this doesn't give closure to the families, but also that it may not be possible to find out specifically what went wrong because they're not going to be able to go in to look around. And those are all concerns. But of course, you know, I'm one of those people. I think to myself, now hang on a minute. They've been working on this for weeks, trying to get the mine stabilized so that they can go in there, and they still can't do it. Should they have ever been mining there in the first place? You know, if it's this difficult to get a mine stabilized when they're not mining, why were they there in the first place? So, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's one of the questions that the Royal Commission of Inquiry will look into. I don't know. Probably not, because I don't think that's within their brief. But nevertheless, that was just in the news over the past day, basically. And although it's not certain yet, the police have given up any hope of recovering the remains. And the receivers who now have control of the mine, PricewaterhouseCoopers, want the mine temporarily sealed, they say. But the problem is that because it's so unstable, once it's sealed, it's unlikely it'll ever be able to be opened up again. So, which would essentially make it the miner's grave. But I don't know. That's where things stand with that. On a less dramatic note... less dark story, I guess. There was a controversy last week where, backing up a bit, McDonald's restaurants in New Zealand just at the end of last year began offering free Wi-Fi service at their units in the country, most of them. And so, you know, this is a big deal because there aren't that many free Wi-Fi spots in New Zealand, very few. And it was also different from most of the few that do exist in that you generally don't have to buy anything. And so, you know, this is a sort of a development. Well, it was revealed last week, I think it was, that the Wi-Fi in McDonald's was blocking certain sites, not all gay sites, but mostly gay sites, gaynz.com, Agenda, which is a transgender organization, Rainbow Youth, which is for GLBT and questioning youth, and plan, it's not Planned Parenthood, but something, family planning was also blocked, and other various sites. And this created some controversy. Now, it turns out, I'm sort of cutting the story short, but it turns out that the problem that they had with gaynz.com was that some of the ads on there featured partial nudity. And I say partial because there are no ads that show naughty bits or anything. And they're not necessarily, many of the ads aren't necessarily any different than you would see on, say, a mainstream news site promoting a resort. In other words, you know, they're wearing like a swimsuit or something. But the context, I think, is what was offending them, McDonald's. Now, McDonald's, as I understand it, is using the same filtering service that was used by schools in the U.S., which resulted in the ACLU suing the schools. I think it was Tennessee or Kentucky or somewhere like that, because they were blocking legitimate gay sites because they were about gay stuff, basically, and that was not on. Well, the same thing seems to be happening here. Now, since then, they have reviewed their blacklist, and they've unblocked Rainbow Youth, which, among other things, provides some services similar to the Trevor Project here in New Zealand. You know, it can help in suicide prevention. So that was a good thing. And they've also unblocked Agenda. But gaynz.com, as last I heard, was still blocked. Now, they were going to be meeting with McDonald's to try to work around this and figure out how they can deal with this. I don't understand why McDonald's can't block the ads, because they probably come from an ad server or maybe a certain path name. But I don't know if there's any developments in this, I'll keep you posted. But what was interesting to me about this, there's two things that interested me. First was that some people, as you would expect, immediately said that McDonald's was being homophobic. And that's not exactly true, in my opinion. I think it is more that they just see the world from their viewpoint, and they can't perceive that their reality isn't the only reality. So in other words, they weren't being deliberately anti-gay. They just didn't see that there was a problem, is what it amounts to, until it was brought to their attention. And to their credit, they did unblock Rainbow Youth and Agender, and they're willing to find a way to unblock gaynz.com, which is the leading news and information website for gay people here in New Zealand. And so, you know, these are all positive things. But what concerned me more was the way the media covered it, because they said that the community was outraged. Well, outrage is a strong word. And I mean, nobody was going to the barricades over it. I think the more common reaction was, oh, yeah, that figures, sort of thing. And the fact that McDonald's was willing to talk about it and figure out a solution and so on meant that there's very little room for outrage. And of course, nobody was talking about allowing hardcore pornography to be shown in McDonald's, although a writer on gaynz.com pointed out you could access white supremacist sites, you could become a skinhead, you could watch a simulated rape from a R18 movie, and several other things in a McDonald's restaurant because they weren't blocked. So clearly their filters aren't very sophisticated. But anyway, what the media reaction is what got me, because there's a right-wing fundamentalist Christian group here in New Zealand called Family First. And they were the people who were behind that anti-smacking referendum. When was it? Last year? Year before? I've forgotten already. Anyway, whenever it was, the one I've talked about before. And they predictably issued a press release, and they were praising McDonald's for the filters. Of course they were, because anything that's gay, in their opinion, is automatically adults only and bad and awful and horrible and all these sorts of things. So this was all predictable. My complaint was with the Herald and TV One, both of which reported on this and ran the quotes from the press release from this organization as if it was legitimately related in some way. Now, my argument is that these people are predictably and reliably anti-gay. If there's something to do, some issue dealing with gay people, they will be opposed to the gay people, always, without exception. There's nothing that they would say positive about gay people or the issues that affect gay people and so on. They're always going to be against us. So what's the point of bringing them in? They're not illuminating anything. In this particular context, I thought that they should have talked to experts in civil rights, civil liberties, rather, things like freedom of access to information. They could have talked to technological people about web filtering and what works and what doesn't and why McDonald's system was so useless, those sorts of things. But instead, because they're lazy, they just ran these predictable, outrageous quotes from a right-wing nut job. And I took exception to that. Well, I blogged about this, and if I remember, I'll put a link in the show notes. And I got some comments from what I assume is a right-wing nut job who accused me of being intolerant because I don't agree with his views. But, you know, nowhere in that post did I ever say anything about what my views were. I did in a subsequent post. And it was that McDonald's wasn't being homophobic, but they were being stupid. And the thing is that what I found interesting about that is that on a sort of a macro level, I do actually agree with this right-wing nut job that no, McDonald's is an inappropriate place for hardcore pornography, essentially, is what he was trying to imply. And I don't think that there are many people who would disagree with that. And I mean, when I'm in a McDonald's with my young nieces, who are presently 8 and 10, I just certainly don't want to see somebody watching porn in there. And so, I mean, there are legitimate, I don't know what the word would be, legitimate limits to what people should be viewing in a McDonald's. That's not the issue. The issue is what is being blocked. And the things that are being blocked are inappropriate, despite what the right-wing nut job was saying. Well, of course, I haven't had any official feedback from the media. I tweeted my links and stuff, but nobody in the media saw it or cared, because they generally don't. And partly because I admittedly, I'm really hard on the journalists, because I should explain why first, because I think it's important. A functioning democracy requires a functioning press in order to survive. It's not just a question of thriving, it's a question of surviving. And journalists, I feel, have a moral obligation to go further than they want to in talking about issues of public importance. And this one isn't high in the hierarchy, but it's representative, I think, because they got the story from GayNZ.com, actually, about the fact that these sites are being blocked. And instead of doing a story, they just ran some of their stuff and they turned to a press release from a reliably right-wing organization instead of doing the actual journalism to find out what the story is, to explain it, and so on. So I don't think the news consumers were served at all by the treatment that this story got in the mainstream press. Now, this is a recurring theme with me, and it's also a theme with me that journalists should never turn to right-wing nut jobs to provide balance, I'm putting in quote marks, on gay and lesbian issues, because they don't turn to the Klan to provide balance on issues about African-Americans, for instance, or neo-Nazis for stories about Jewish issues or Jewish people or whatever. The list goes on and on. And so my feeling is that it's all or nothing. It either should be they always include right-wing nut jobs to talk about these issues, or they never should. And the obvious answer is they never should, because they don't add anything to the debate. Now, if you want to have a discussion about the place of religion or gay people in religion, then those sorts of people might be appropriate under some circumstances because they're religionists. But if you're talking about a secular issue affecting a secular company and a secular community, why are you turning to religious nut jobs to provide illumination and balance? It makes no sense whatsoever, and it's a practice that has got to stop. Now, I don't think that the media is being homophobic in doing that, as many others do. I just think they're being incredibly lazy, and that's what needs to change. But so that was a bit of a controversy last week, and I got 2 blog posts out of it. So it's not all bad. Content is king. But those are the things in the news I wanted to talk about today. I'm sure that there are other things I could talk about, but I'll save that for a more serious podcast. Instead, I'm going to talk now about what we've been up to. And of course, this was the holiday season. Nigel's last day of work was Christmas Eve, which was a Friday. And we just had our normal Friday takeaways with his sister on Friday night. And that was pretty much that. Now, on Saturday, I actually had a few things to finish up all that week. And even a few to do on Saturday. Nigel's brother and mother were coming up later that day. And sometime around lunchtime or so. So we just finished up a few things in the morning. It was mostly ready, actually. And then we had our Christmas Day. And the next day, Boxing Day. I actually don't remember if we did anything. I don't know if we went anywhere. Maybe we did. I can't remember. But memory fades quickly. But over that period, the next week or so, we actually went around quite a lot. We went to the mall in Albany, which is north of us in the northern end-ish of Auckland. And the main thing we wanted to get there was some shelves for Nigel's office, which was one of the projects that I had lined up. Because getting his office organized means I can get my office organized. And it's this flow-on effect. Each room is sort of, I don't know, interlocked with another. And you can't really clean up one thing without cleaning up another thing. And it's this vicious circle. Well, we made major strides in doing that and got his office all reorganized. So he's happy with that, which is good. And then last week, on Sunday, our young nieces arrived, and they stayed with us through Thursday morning. We took them out for lunch, ultimately, to an Asian food court, which was rather adventurous for one of our nieces, and then took them over to Nigel's sister's house, and they stayed there Thursday and Friday night. And then Saturday, we took them home again and had a big barbecue down in Hamilton. And Nigel talked about that on his show, The Third Colony, which is on QNation.fm every other Saturday. The next one is a week from Saturday. So whatever that is, we'll bring up the calendar. I'll just sort of hum and haw until then. That will be that'll be February, won't it? That will be February 5th. If I'm not mistaken. Let's say, wait a minute. Oh, sorry, I'm looking the wrong day. It'll be 30th of January, which is Auckland anniversary weekend. So that's when his next show is. Anyway, so he mentioned that, and I did reveal in that show, because you may not have heard it, I did reveal on that show something I haven't anywhere else before. And that's that one of the staples of a Kiwi barbecue is garlic bread. And I have no idea why. But anytime you go to a Kiwi barbecue, somebody will have brought garlic bread. And the store-bought kind, usually. They don't usually make it themselves. And it's foil-wrapped, and they just usually chuck it on the grill. I mean, a lot of barbecues have a shelf for warming things or heating them up, and they'll often put them there. And so, yeah, that's what we had that as well. But it just it always struck me as odd at first when I first started going to Kiwi barbecues to see this. And then after a while, I got used to it. And it just suddenly, I suddenly remembered on Sunday when we were doing the show that that's something I hadn't talked about before. So there you go. Another Kiwi fun fact to know and tell. Anyway, the bigger news against all that, however, is the arrival of Sunny, the new puppy. And she arrived a couple days before Christmas. I think it was the Tuesday of that week, if I remember correctly. And she was fine. I mean, the woman brought her to the deck first, and she stayed on her lead for a while, and she sniffed around, and Jake sniffed her, and of course tried to mount her. And then she wanted to go in the house, so I said, I'll just let her off the lead, let her go. And so she did, and she ran around. She didn't sniff a whole lot. She stayed pretty much close to the woman who brought her, who's the daughter of the couple who had her. And she was sort of fine, but a little bit standoffish. She'd come over and sort of greet us, and then she'd go back and so on. This kept going on for a while. And Nigel got home. He came home early that day. And at some point, I don't exactly remember how or why, but we decided we'd sit on the floor. But Sunny apparently really likes it when people sit on the floor with her, probably because it's down at her level. And then she was much more friendly. She came up to us, and she would lick us and stuff, because she's a very licky girl, and do all this sort of stuff. And so that sort of broke the ice. And then eventually came time where decided that the woman would leave. And so she left. And Sunny did lie on the floor looking out the doors toward the gate that she'd gone out for quite a while, until we closed the curtains, which we do when the sun gets to a certain point because it gets too hot in the lounge otherwise. And she was fine after that. She basically ignored that, and she sort of ran around and sniffed and sniffed with Jake and so on. Well, this continued on for the next couple of days, and I decided to give her a bath on Thursday, I think it was. And so I did. I gave her a bath, and we discovered as a result of doing all that she had fleas. So we got flea treatment, and I did the animals. But Jake, meanwhile, has never had fleas before because, a lot of reasons, but he's never had fleas. And they drove him absolutely mad, and they gave him the what are they called, dermatitis or whatever it is, the skin disease that comes from having fleas. So the following week, we ended up having to take him to the vet, and got some antibiotics and some steroids. Steroids dealt with the itching and discomfort, and of course the antibiotics cleared up the infection, and he's fine now. But Sunny, we had to treat a second time. A couple weeks later, the fleas were back. So I gave her another bath, and we gave her another treatment, and she seems to finally be coming around. But it's been really difficult to deal with it for some reason, and I don't know why. But as it happens, it's coming around again, time for Jake to be treated. The end of the week, he is due. And we've got to keep doing that for 3 months, 3 to 4 months anyway, to make sure that the fleas are all dead because they have a monthly life cycle. And the vet told us, no, be sure you do that. So, of course, we will. But Sunny and Jake have been getting along pretty much okay. Jake, of course, does try to mount her fairly frequently, and sometimes Sunny gets really annoyed with that, understandably. but it's not about because they're both fixed. It's because it's a dominance thing. He's asserting his role in the pack as the alpha dog, and mostly Sunny's sort of okay, whatever. Now, Sunny is 15 months younger than Jake, we found out. She's 2.5 years old, and whereas Jake is going to turn 4 in April. And she's very puppyish in many ways, and so she barks too much, she licks a lot, she's really boisterous and so on. And Jake was too when he was younger, so we're hoping she'll calm down a bit as she gets older. But so they didn't play at first very much with each other. They just sort of run around, and one would bark and the other one would start, that sort of thing. It wasn't, you know, a whole lot of playing until I gave Jake a bath. And then whenever I give Jake a bath, he runs around. We call it being crazy dog, because he just runs around like he's mad in a really fast circle, around and around and around and around in the living room, because it's sort of open plan. So there's this big circuit he can run. Well, she started chasing him. And so then they chased each other for a while. And it was actually really cute. Well, that's happened two times since then. So that means that they're playing with each other now. And the other day, I was actually, while we were rearranging Nigel's office, I was sitting on his sofa while he was doing something. And Jake jumped up on the sofa to lie next to me, as he always does. There's a two-seater sofa in Nigel's office. And then Sonny jumped up and lay partly against me and basically half on top of Jake. And he didn't really care. So he took a photo of that, and I did post that to my blog, and sent that to her former father, and he apparently quite liked it. And so it was just an example of how they're basically getting along. Now, they don't tend to cuddle up with each other all the time. In fact, that's the only time I've seen them do it. But they do, from time to time, lie right next to each other, and they don't seem to have any problems with that. We've only had one major growling that I'm aware of, and that was at feeding time. I had been able to feed them side by side. Well, pretty much side by side. I've got this big gray container for the dog food. It's from, it's an American company that makes these plastic things. I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, doesn't matter. And they were handling it just fine. But this particular day, somebody decided to stick their nose into somebody else's bowl. I don't know who did it to whom. And there's a lot of growling and carrying on. And I intervened, and I realized later that it was probably not a good idea, because they've got to sort it out. They've got to establish their ranking or whatever in the pack. And I don't know if Sonny was challenging Jake, or if Jake was asserting his authority, or what the story was. But so that was a bit of unpleasantness. But apart from that, there hasn't been any, that's what I'm looking for, any conflict to speak of. And so that's all been good. Now, when Sonny first arrived, she was really annoying Bella, because Sonny's best friend was a cat called Toy. And they would play constantly. Well, Bella didn't know this dog from Adam. And here's this dog, three times her size, four times more than that, her size. And she's like, what is going on here? And she had been sleeping on the bed. She didn't want to come anywhere near the bed. And well, she's sort of gotten over that now. And she just kind of barges right past Sonny if she wants to get to us. And so she's fine as well, finally. And everybody seems happy. And it seems like very often wherever I am, the animals are. They seem to follow me around like I'm the Pied Piper or something. It's kind of weird, really. Nice, but weird. And so they do that, and they follow me around, which is nice. I think it's nice. And on the whole, they all seem to be getting along just fine. This is the first time we've ever adopted an adult dog. We've always gotten puppies before. And so that's a new experience in itself. But we found out something that we hadn't known until she arrived. And that was that when the older couple decided they were going to go into the home, into the assisted living place or whatever, they knew that they had to give up Sonny. And there were all sorts of people who had met her and who knew her, who offered to take her in. But the woman decided that she wanted Sonny to come and live with us, because we had Jake, and Sonny could live with one of her kind or whatever, you know, have a companion. And we didn't know any of that until Sonny arrived. But it amounts to the fact that Sonny coming to live with us was sort of like this elderly woman's dying wish, in a way, which gave it a sort of a poignance that we hadn't expected. Now, I had thought that Sonny would be pining after her old family, and quite frankly, she hasn't been doing that, which surprised me. She just seems to have slotted in. She seems to really enjoy herself here. She's always very friendly. She wants to be where we are. She wants to have scratches and cuddles and things, and she likes to lick us, as I said. But she hasn't seemed to have any negative consequences. She hasn't seemed to mourn or anything. And so in that way, she seems quite different from Jake, although she is younger. I don't know if that's related to her. Maybe it's because she was left alone from time to time, whereas Jake seldom is. I don't know. But in conclusion, she's doing very well. She's settled in well. She gets along with the other two animals just fine. And it's almost as if she's always been here in that sense. So far, so good. And that's the Sunny Report. Now, I did mention that our nieces were here, and of course, they loved playing with the two animals. Our young niece, who's 8, would pick Sunny up and carry her around, which was kind of funny, really. Would also pick up Bella, too. And time was that Bella wouldn't let anybody pick her up. And so all of that has changed. And but, you know, they had a whole, we did a variety of things. We took them shopping one day, got a bunch of clothes, and we would take them out for lunch and things. And they watched some movies, and they played on the Wii a little bit, not all that much this time. But the last full day they were here, I think it was last evening, we were having dinner, and the TV was on. It was on the Disney Channel, and I swear that thing's like a drug. Their eyes, their faces would turn to it. Their eyes, their whole faces would sort of glaze over, if you can imagine that. Not just their eyes. It was like they were in this catatonic state almost. It was really bizarre, which is especially interesting because I swear that the Disney Channel only has one program. They keep showing it over and over again. But anyway, yeah, so they had a good time. And then their auntie, Nigel's sister, took them on a mystery tour around Auckland. A friend of our niece's, our niece had a friend who was here from Scotland. And so they were sort of doing double duty, showing her around Auckland as well. They went up in Sky Tower, and they went up to a high point in West Auckland where you can see both the Tasman and the Pacific Oceans, Tasman Sea and Pacific Ocean at the same time. Not in the same direction, of course, because they're different parts of the country. And, stuff like that. I've forgotten what else they did. And they went swimming and stuff like that as well. So they had a good holiday up here. And that is pretty much all we've been up to over the holiday break. I've gotten my new computer set up, and that's been an issue because I switched to the new GarageBand, which I downloaded through the Apple App Store, by the way. And I'm still getting used to that. I haven't quite got it all sorted out yet, and Nigel's got to get my sound sorted. My mixer isn't hooked up right. I want to use it alone rather than through the sort of jerry-rigged system I had before, and Nigel's going to sort that out for me at some stage. But that is pretty much all we've been doing for the past month. More or less. Now, because it has been so long, one of the advantages of it being so long is that I have a pile of phone messages, and most of them are short, actually. So let's just start with the first one, shall we? Okay, let's.
Hello, this is your holiday call to keep your phone going. This is Roger. Bye.
Now, see, Roger doesn't just comment on the podcast. He also helps keep it going. And I figure that anybody who takes the time to do that deserves to be heard. On now to the next message.
Arthur and Nigel, this is Brother Santis in Denver. I just want to wish you a happy new year and hope to be listening to you in the coming year. Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, thank you for that, Brother Santis, and happy new year to you and happy new year to everyone. I forgot to say that before. And I actually suggested to Nigel that he might want to play that on the Third Colony, but he decided that since it came in from on my podcast number, that it really should stick with the podcast. So that's where it is. And this is, of course, the first episode that I've recorded since December 17. So there you go. But thanks for that, Brother Santis. And now on to the next message.
Hi, Arthur. This is Roger. This is your monthly reminder that you don't have to panic about getting your phone renewed for another month or something. Whatever, I'm rambling. It's early in the morning, at least here. Bye.
See, isn't that a pal? That is a pal for you. And by the way, I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but if I haven't, I highly recommend Roger's blog, Ramblin' with Roger. And there are links on my podcast site and on my blog. It's one of the most interesting blogs that I read because it's so eclectic. It doesn't get boring because it's just about one thing. I mean, I read different blogs for different reasons, but one of the things that as I said, that I really enjoy about Roger's is that it is so eclectic. And if you do go to my blog, amrinsawblogspot.com, down on the right-hand side, way, way, way down there, there's four blogs that I listed. I originally did it as a test. And it's the ones that I read regularly, and it lists them in order of the most recent post. And it did it as an experiment only, but I realized those are the four blogs that I do read the most. It's Roger's, Joe My God, which is sort of a news amalgamation site. I get links to other places through that. Jason's blog, of course, my co-host on Too Political, and Slap Upside the Head. Mark has been a guest on this podcast in the past as well. And those are all, those are the four main blogs that I read all the time. There are others that I read frequently, some that I read occasionally, but those are the four that I always check out. So if you want, you can just go there to get to it, or you can go directly to Roger's site. As I said, there are links, and if I remember, I'll even put a link in the show notes because I do highly endorse it. There's the Ameren seal of approval. And now, who will the next caller be?
Hey, Arthur, this is Ramble. Just thought I'd give you a call. I've been fashionably behind on all the podcasts because I was listening to a book called Freedom by Jonathan Franzen, and I thought it was very good, but it's like 19 CDs, so it took me some time, and now I'm even further behind on podcasts. So I thought I would give you a call because I was listening to you today, and I think you're doing well, and I just thought I'd call and say Happy New Year to you, and all that good stuff. And I thought, you know, of all the things you talked about, I just wish that you would stop hiding the fact that I'm the very first podcaster that you ever met. I really wish you to talk about it because you never say anything on the show. And even though it's been a while since that happened, I mean, it really hurts my feelings that you really didn't talk about it at all. I just wanted to say that. It's just crazy. Get on it, okay? Anyway, I love you, buddy. Okay, talk to you later. Goodbye.
Well, thank you for that, Tom. And I suppose at some stage I really should mention that you're the only podcaster I've met in real life. I don't talk about that as a rule. I mean, only in private. But it is something I probably should mention publicly at some stage. Of course, I also was a interview guest or whatever on Ramble's podcast, RambleRedhead.com. And I'm trying to think when that was. That would have been 2007, I think, thereabouts. I should probably put links to those in the show notes, in probably somewhere permanently on my site, because it was the very first time I was ever a guest on somebody's podcast, like that anyway. And I think that to this day that it's the only place I've talked about some of the things that I talked about on that podcast. So I should try to remember to put links in somewhere. But thanks for that, Tom. And check out his show, Ramble Redhead, at RambleRedhead.com. And maybe one day I'll talk about the fact that he's the only podcaster I've ever met. And now one final call.
Hey, Arthur. This is Brother Satis in Denver, Colorado. I'm just calling to say howdy, and wish you and Nigel the best, and all the kids. Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, thank you for that too, Brother Snatus, and thank you for your other call. Thank you to Roger for both his calls, and to Tom the Ramble Redhead. Thank you all very much. You've kept my phone line now into February, which is always a good thing. Now, before I go on to the written comment, I did want to mention that I did receive some Christmas cards this year. Received one from Nessa, and from Brother Sinatus, and from Trucker Alex, who also included some scratchies. I'm still trying to come up with a more unique way of doing them than just scratching them off on the podcast, as Big Fatty does. One from Seder69, one from Pooh Bear, and who else? Oh, Fairy Princess Holly, and Animals, well, and her husband as well, also from the Wimbies. And just yesterday, when I went to the P.O. box, there was a Christmas card there from Hat M, all the way from Budapest, which is really cool. It's actually a really cool card. I wish I could, do a picture of it or something, but it's really cool. And I presume it's handmade. It looks handmade anyway. And it's really good. And thank you, everyone, for your cards. Now, I didn't do cards this year, as you may have noticed, those of you who sent me cards. And I don't think I did them last year either. Christmas cards just are not big in New Zealand, and so it's kind of hard to remember to do something about it. Next year, however, I am planning on doing my own Christmas cards. And so I'm letting you know that now, because if you decide that you want a Christmas card from me, first of all, you're going to have to send me one. But the other thing is that you're going to have to save your pennies, because it's not cheap. And you probably have to send it like December 1st in order to ensure that it gets here on time. The one from Hat M, he posted on the 23rd of December, I think it was. Yeah, 23rd of December. And it got here sometime in January, probably the first or second week of January. I'm not really sure because I didn't go to the post office until yesterday. So those are just things to keep in mind. And but as I said, next year I am planning on actually sending cards. And that will be a subject for much later in the year. But now I do have a comment that was from my last episode, 243, and it was posted on Christmas Day. So it's my Christmas present. So how can I not read it, eh? And it's from Pink, who said, "Hi, Arthur. Greetings from sunny Dunedin on Christmas evening. I hope your household had as good a time today as we did. I listened to your latest podcast while cleaning up the debris from our festivities, and I find myself with so much to say, I don't know if the comment form will take it all. A great podcast indeed. You played two interesting comments from Kyle in Maui. He touched on the ways in which we can stop seeing the humanity in others and treat them badly. This made me think about differing attitudes to the Pike River disaster in New Zealand and elsewhere. I was at home in the U.S. when the news broke, and my American father-in-law was staying with us. His immediate reaction to the news was to hope that the company would be punished for their misdeeds, possibly by being sued by the miners' families. It was noticeable that at this early point, none of the news stories I was seeing had even raised the question of blame for the disaster. Now the matter is being raised in an inquiry is to be held. It's still not the dominant theme in the coverage I'm seeing. It's not, I think, that the New Zealand people and media are naive about the fact that companies can and do behave irresponsibly, but rather that they don't suppose that assigning blame will solve this problem, make anyone feel better, or make sure that it will never happen again. I suspect that Americans are too quick to feel that anything can be fixed by action, and that Kiwis are too quick to feel that shit happens and there's not much to be done about it. What do you think?" Okay, this is me again. Bink, I think you're probably right. And also, of course, the U.S. is a very litigious society, and Americans will sue at the drop of a hat. And that doesn't happen in New Zealand. In some cases, it can't happen. We can't sue each other for personal injury, for instance, because we have universal accident compensation. And that was the trade-off in exchange for getting universal coverage for accidents, injuries resulting from accidents and so on. We gave up the right to sue over that. I should say we, because I wasn't here at the time. New Zealanders did. And it's generally unheard of for a company to be sued for negligence, because usually that's done in the normal chain of events. If a company does something bad, they are prosecuted by the relevant authorities, and that's that. I don't know that it's not possible to sue, or that it is possible for that matter. I can't recall ever hearing a company being sued for negligence. Maybe it happens. I've heard of people bringing what they call private prosecutions, and I presume that's because the police aren't prosecuting. But I don't know that I've ever heard of a company in New Zealand being sued for some sort of misdeed, for whatever that's worth. Bink goes on. "You expressed interest in how I found things in the West Coast when I visited my sister in Greymouth last week. The disaster was hugely present to them all the time we were here with them. They were not personal friends of any of the miners who died, but they had close friends who worked at the mine. Those friends are distressed and now unemployed. Recruiters for Australian mines are in Greymouth, and some of my sister's friends are taking jobs where they will fly out to Australia for 5 days, work in the mines, then fly home for 5 days to see their families and kids, and then do it all again. It's not much of a life, but they are thankful to be able to pay their mortgages. An ugly situation." This is me again. Since Bank wrote that, there's been some coverage about the Australian mining firms coming to the West Coast to recruit miners, quite successfully by all reports. Anyway, she goes on, "An unexpected, to me, sideline is that the disaster has kept my brother-in-law very busy. He's a tattoo artist and thinks he's done about 50 memorial tattoos since the disaster. The work is not technically difficult, but unsurprisingly, he finds it emotionally draining." And, you know, I can't even imagine what that would be like. "Greymouth was looking as prosperous as I have ever seen it, but with the mine closing, my sister thinks it'll all be gone in a few months, and they are bracing themselves for some hard times with their tattoo business. Oddly, walking about the streets, Christchurch felt more depressed than Greymouth when we were visiting my other sister. The rubble is all cleaned up, and there are either empty lots or neatly fenced-off buildings where the destruction happened. But you can see the damaged buildings all over the place, which is very disquieting. There are plenty of closed shops near the square, and not many people out shopping for the weekend before Christmas. I have more to say on some other topics that came up, but perhaps I'd better go sleep off all those mince pies. More soon, Bank. And thank you very much for that, Bank, and also for your observations about Greymouth and Christchurch in particular. Of course, what Bank couldn't have known is that the very next day there was a significant aftershock in Christchurch on Boxing Day, and it caused a lot of damage. I think it was several million dollars worth of damage, as I recall, was on the Boxing Day aftershock. And, you know, the only thing that really separates an aftershock from an earthquake is time, because if it happens within a certain amount of time within a major earthquake, they're called aftershocks. But some of these jolts are as strong as an ordinary earthquake, or stronger even than an ordinary earthquake. And so the one on Boxing Day was pretty intense by all reports. And it's been a hard year for the South Island, but also for certain regions of the country. I mean, Canterbury has had the earthquakes. The West Coast, of course, had the mine disaster. The Waikato and even Northland have had drought, and neither of which is being relieved. By the way, that's actually a reminder. Last time I talked about the weather people being in disagreement over what was happening with the weather. Well, it turns out the Met Service was right, and the droughts haven't broken. We're actually about to be assaulted by the remnants of two cyclones. And of course, cyclones are what are the Southern Hemisphere name for what the Northern Hemisphere calls hurricanes. These are Category 1, which, as anybody who knows about hurricanes knows, is quite mild by such standards. And these are dying storms. And by the time they get here, they're not actually cyclones anymore. But they are expected to drop some rain on the Waikato, which is the farming region south of Auckland. And which is good, because Hamilton is in the Waikato. And when we went down there, we were shocked at how brown the countryside is. They just haven't had rain in ages. And not that there's actually two cyclones that are going through. Not that they're going to do enough to really change that, but at least it's going to help fix it a little bit anyway. So, you know, that's better than nothing, I suppose. But again, thank you for that, Bank. Now, as I said, there are, I'm sure, lots of things that I need to be talking about and lots of things that I will be talking about. But I think that's enough for today. It's good to be back, and I will be back with another episode sooner than later. Who knows when? I never know when. But thanks for listening, and I will talk to you again soon. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Airman's Podcast at airmanspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at airmanspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.